Darth Vader's Luke Skywalker's father. Fuck you, I didn't know that.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk about the movie The Contender, and we read Jordan Cronick's answers to our five questions.
We're geeks without God.
Hi, this week on Geeks Without God, we're going to talk about the movie The Contender with Joan Allen, Jeff Bridges, Gary Oldman, and Christian Slater. I'm Nick Glover. I'm joined by Molly and Tim.
Hi.
And we're going to talk about this movie that I had never seen before, and these two had. Again,
I thought I'd seen it, but the more I watched it, the less sure I was that I'd ever seen it.
I've seen it now for sure. I've seen it a lot.
It's one of my wife's favorite movies,
so I've seen it many, many times.
It's about Jeff Bridges is the president. And he was up for an Oscar for this?
He was nominated for an Oscar.
His vice president dies before the movie starts, and he's trying to find a vice presidential candidate, and his pick is Joan Allen. And it's kind of controversial because he's picked a woman. She also happens to be an atheist, which isn't a big deal in the movie, really. They barely touch on it, which I think in real life, it would have been a big fucking deal.
Maybe not in real life, but the thing is, this movie was made in the year 2000, and they made a much bigger deal about her being this huge slut, which, whatever. But
yeah.
The thing is, in the year 2000, pre-9/11, but post-Clinton, being a huge slut, bigger deal.
They do mention Clinton a few times, and her opinion on him and the trial, and how...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they use her words and her opinions about him against her, specifically.
We were talking about this at the end of the movie, but I think it's a very important point to make right at the start. That this is a pre-9/11 attacks movie, and it very much shows in a lot of ways.
One you mentioned was one of her sticking points was...
platforms.
One of her platforms was increasing the military budget... but not in any sort of anti-terrorism or defense way, but to wipe out genocide.
Yes, to prevent countries, because that was when, like, Bosnia was at the forefront of foreign policy.
And I think Rwanda was around that time as well.
If you heard any politician now that would say, we need to increase America's military spending or military budget, it would be followed by the words, to keep America safe or to keep America free.
Yeah.
And that didn't even come up. But I really do think that the atheism thing, which I thought was going to be a bigger deal, and my cousin Hack was the one that suggested this movie, right? Because he mentioned
that Lane Hansen was his favorite atheist character because she is an atheist. And the nice thing about it is that she is an atheist and that she's not embarrassed by it. There's never a moment where she backs away from it, where she tries to pretend that she's not an atheist.
Well, and I think that the thing is, after 9/11, and, you know, not right away, but that's when it started, was this increasing religious fervor among our politicians.
It comes and goes,
but it definitely started, like, what we're currently experiencing, we were not experiencing in the year 2000.
It goes back to the 50s, though.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I don't
what
remember
we're currently experiencing,
every,
we were not the experiencing current,
the
in
current,
the year 2000.
The current wave.
There were no Bachmans, there were none of this, like, biblical literalists?
We still had Duke Gingrich, Jerry Falwell, like...
But they weren't in power.
The religious right was still gaining hold in the Republican Party. They were not entrenched and in charge.
They were more laughable. It was kind of seen as being fringe and not this accepted thing. And I think that if Lane Hansen, the candidate... Well, if this movie was made today, a much bigger deal would be made about her being an atheist. I really do think, because that would be the what they would be taking her to task on. Think about all this Obama's a secret Muslim shit.
Yeah.
And stuff. No, seriously. Well, yeah. Seriously. I mean,
But you know, let's be fair. Obama being a Muslim is all about racism. You know, no matter what anybody says,
and
if Obama, if we don't have a black president, nobody's, you know, Mitt Romney, nobody's going to pretend, say, oh my God, Mitt Romney is secretly a Muslim. That's not going to happen.
No, but
Mitt
no
Romney
one's making a
president.
Big deal about him being a Mormon, because it's a religion at least.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, I mean, I don't want to, you know, so it's interesting. I would love to see, like, and it's not possible. I wish I had like some sort of viewing device where I could see this movie made today.
Sure.
And what would be changed because the political climate.
There would be some different things.
Everything fucking changed when they bombed us.
I don't know if her character would be an atheist. And it's interesting to wonder why the filmmaker made that choice. And I've watched this movie a lot. I've watched the commentary track on this movie. And it's been a while since I've watched it. The one thing I remember mostly is the way the director talked about how he used food as a means of exercising power.
Oh, there's Jeff Bridges is so great.
Oh yeah, Jeff Bridges is the character. He's always using food as a way to create a bridge between him and the person that he's dealing with, as opposed
to offer them food.
He's offering them food as a way to bring them together.
Yeah,
make them feel
as
better.
Opposed
breaking
to
bread. Breaking
as
bread.
Opposed to Shelley Runyon, the villain in the film, who uses food. You don't see it very often, but there's the one scene where he clearly is using food as a weapon
to bully.
Because, yeah, he's using it as a bullying tactic by ordering something another character won't eat.
And which is the meat. And,
and a man ordering for a woman is automatically a power play.
But not only is it... Well, I think also with Jeff Bridges as the president, it was also a display of power.
Sure.
Like putting his big presidential dick on the table and being like...
He found it funny.
Oh, it was always in good humor. It was always...
He was like, can you believe this? I mean, I can ask for anything and they'll bring it. Like,
and it's kind of a running joke. Like, he kind of asks for some weird, extravagant shit out of nowhere. Like, oh, I want Kung Pao chicken, but walnuts instead of cashews.
Hazelnut pudding.
And the chef's like, yes, sir.
Hazelnut pudding. And they're like, yep, right away. Yeah. And at the very end of the movie, he's like... Yeah, I want a grilled cheese sandwich, Munster on rye, and they call back up, and they're like, oh, no, we don't have any, I'm sorry, Mr. President, we don't have any Munster. He's like, oh, Jesus Christ, like, can you keep the wheels from falling off the wagon? Like,
yeah, the beauty of that scene, and I this movie's old enough, I don't care about spoilers. What I love about that scene is the president at that point is about to win.
Yeah.
And in fact, the fact that they don't have any Munster is a victory for him, because they say he's like 6.5 years into his presidential term now, okay? So for 6.5 years, he's been trying to trip up the kitchen.
Yeah.
And
the
just
fact that it's
managed
something
to pull it off.
As mundane as Munster cheese. Right? Like, they had shark steak.
Shark steak.
But they didn't have Munster, because they ran out, and that's
what
great.
So what you do is, after 6.5 years, what he finally learns is he should have asked for something basic.
Yeah.
And then he would have won way earlier. But
But
I like the fact that even though... It's packaged as a failure.
Yeah.
For the
president,
it's a victory. And, of course, it's coming on what's going to be an even bigger victory for him.
Well, and packaged as a failure.
Yeah.
Again, that scene is... Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks he's about to concede something, and, in fact, he's about to unfurl his brilliant plan and win.
Well, and
sort of.
The food as power being a semiotic is also really interesting, because the villain... Shelley is running in, as always, he's talking through his food, which is kind of a power.
Grisly,
well,
it's visceral.
It's a visceral thing, but it's also a power play in the sense that you now have to listen extra carefully to what he's saying to be able to make sure you hear him. And he knows that it's gross. No one who's raised...
It's inconsiderate
you
to the
know
people
this.
You're talking to.
And you
and
know
you're
it
not,
is.
And you're saying the person across from you is not important enough for you to stop eating.
Yep. And you're saying... And,
totally.
And they know it, and you know they know it, and also you know that they have to watch your mouth to make...
Yep.
I mean, it's a very... It's that whole thing, like when someone comes in to sit and they're seated lower than you.
Oh yeah,
you know,
that kind of
weird businessman.
When they
show him
cutting that the bloody steak, it's like an inch and a half thick. He's cutting off a big chunk with gristly bits,
mm-hmm.
like an edge piece, and he pops it into his mouth, and it's really
crackly.
Like, they really focus on that quite a bit in that bit.
Yeah, it's the whole shot. Is him cutting the steak and putting it in his mouth.
Yeah, it's not a like tender piece of meat that's about to like melt in his mouth. No,
mm-hmm.
he's gonna be occupied for a minute there with that bite.
Yeah, and the interesting thing that we haven't gotten to yet is, you know, this movie Lane is an atheist character, and of course we're an atheist podcast, but really what the movie's about is sexism.
It's a good Atheism Plus movie. Atheism Plus movie, if you think about it.
In addition to sexism, I'd say it's also quite a bit about being a private citizen and what doesn't fucking matter for politics, which includes gender.
Yeah.
And religion.
It's very much about trying to say all these things that we ascribe to being important as far as what we want from our politicians have nothing to do with whether or not they will be effective at governing this country. And so the idea that she's an atheist, that she cheated, that she had an affair with her best friend's husband.
She facilitated adultery, yes.
Yeah, this is the splitting hairs. And that she engaged in some less than socially acceptable sexual...
She fucked a dude while she sucked another dude off, say.
Yeah.
Well,
and it turns out she did.
Well, and dudes coming in and out of the room is actually what one person says.
Yes, that's the whole thing. She's in a room, and there's guys going in and out of
it. And she comes out of the room covered in semen. And, of course, that was in college, and she's now at least 20 years beyond college.
And again, spoilers, she didn't.
Right.
It didn't happen.
But that's
the rumor.
And that's not the point. The point isn't whether or not she did it. The point is, it doesn't fucking matter. Yeah. It doesn't make her a good or bad vice president if she blew a dude while another dude fucked her.
Before she was even in politics at all.
If she was a fucking congresswoman when she did it. If she was single, she could fucking do that if she wanted to.
And the thing is, what I think was interesting was how Runyon says, the character says, you know, I'm going to tell them this, and you know why they're going to listen to me? Because I have a big microphone in front of my face.
And
it doesn't matter what I say. And what I think is interesting is this movie should be holding a mirror up to the voters, because the thing is, I mean, if you read polls and read what people talk about when they ask them, like, what matters, they'll say, like, oh, I'm voting for this candidate because he looks nice.
Sure.
Or because look at how Gore, like people thought, said he lost the election when he, like, kissed his wife and yelled all, like, retarded, like, rah, or whatever. I mean,
People said they voted for Bush because he was the candidate that they most want to go and have a beer
with. Yeah. Things like that.
Like having a beer with somebody determines that they're going to be a good fucking president.
So is it the Congress, like, is it the villain, Runyon's fault for knowing that that's what's going to matter to the American people who are watching this?
He's exploiting it,
right. But the fact is, we give it to him to exploit.
Sure.
We allow that to be an exploitable thing in us.
And there's a whole other conversation there about media and what they focus on and what they say is important or not. And I mean, ultimately, if all the information people are presented is this not useful bullshit information, then that's all people are really have to make a decision on. Yes, they can go out of their way to put forth additional effort to inform themselves, and that's everyone's responsibility as a citizen in the United States of America. However, when 98% of the information that's out there is bullshit that doesn't matter,
infotainment.
Yeah, it's totally overwhelming, and
opinions presented as fact.
People aren't going to make informed decisions if there's no real information for them.
Right.
Opinions presented as fact is what I genuinely feel is what's poisoning American politics, and I really think that. That's one of the things that social media is failing us at, is that someone makes up a statistic or makes up a quote, puts it on a picture.
Without context.
Yeah. And that is seen by hundreds of millions of people in, like, hours.
What's that whole
thing? Even though there are 50 gazillion fact check sites, they don't make a goddamn bit of difference.
It doesn't matter how many people then say, you know, someone posts, you know, that info, whatever, and I say, actually, here's a link to a fact check site, you know, fact check.org that says that that's not true. Now, that person who posted is like, wow, I feel like an idiot, but there's 17 shares. And out of those shares, how many got shared?
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah. And are you going to go to every single one of those shares and post the same, excuse me, she has permission
to, my grandmother literally called my mom and told her that she read in an email, an official email from the Republican Party, that they had documents that stated that Obama had rigged the election when he got elected, and that there was proof. My mom said, "What's the proof?" And she said, "Well, they have letters. I didn't see them, but they say they have them. They wouldn't just say that." And my mom's like, my mom goes, "That's funny. I have an email that says that Ann and Mitt Romney sacrificed children on their altar of their Mormon church, like young children. That's one of the things that the Mormons do. I have an email that says that. Are you going to vote for them still?"
And they have pictures.
And my grandmother says, "Well, I mean, if that's what they do, that's terrible." And my mom's like, "Oh my God, really, Mom? That's not what they..." Like, you know what I'm saying? But that's, I mean, she's old, yes, but that's a lot of people. No, that's
not. That
old.
Is not a function
old
of age.
Old people vote.
That's not a function. I mean, it's old people true. Vote, but young people do.
She believes everything Fox News tells her.
Young, oh, yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, young people do it too. People of every age, you know, yeah. people that are raised in a fundamentalist kind of society, kind of church, are going to vote against homosexual marriage just because they've been told that's what they need to do.
Yeah.
They won't sit down and evaluate whether or not that makes sense,
right?
Because that's what they're programmed to believe, and so they get these emails that tell them these lies, and they don't bother to check up on them because that's not important. It just reinforces what they already think.
Well, and if they were only voting on issues like, you know, Prop 8 or the marriage amendment or whatever, as bad as that is, fine. But they're not. They're also voting on, like, who's going to run the country based on what they think is the news, but it's actually the Nancy Grace infotainment hour. And it's not. And, you know, when Fox News and channels are saying, "Oh, but this is our entertainment programming," it's like, right, but it's mixed in with the news and it says Fox News. So how are people who maybe, you know, if the average IQ is 100, how are people who have that average intelligence?
They're not making statements. They're just asking questions.
Right.
Who's to say he's not a Muslim?
Exactly.
Who's to say, yeah.
Who's to say that his birth certificate is real?
And it's frustrating because, you know, we're smart.
Yes. Yeah, 50 times.
It's been done.
It's like, we're smart, and we all have smart friends. I mean, most of us, I know pretty much everyone that we all know. I mean, we have a lot of overlap in our social circles. I don't know a lot of dumb people. I really don't. But that doesn't mean there aren't a lot of people out there that are ignorant to the scientific method for questioning and the debate method for questioning evidence and citations.
Man, I'd love to see it like a debate, like an actual debate with debate rules.
Yeah.
A moderator that isn't
fucking Jim Lehrer. Like, yeah, ineffectual.
And the movie, I think, ties into that in the fact that they make accusations without really offering any solid proof.
Yes.
And no accountability.
Those accusations. And it just, and people just accept it as, well, if somebody says it into a mic, it must be true.
And no one holds them accountable for if they're saying something that's bullshit or not true or that's just scandal.
Yeah.
No one is there saying that there's a penalty for repercussions for that.
And there's that one of the things I've always disliked, ever since I was a kid, very much disliked about the American justice system is that pleading the fifth, which is supposed to be an amendment right that grants you the ability to not incriminate yourself, means you're guilty and you're not going to say it something.
Sure.
So when someone says, "I plead the fifth, I'm taking the fifth, I'm not answering that question," it's like, oh, so that means the answer is the worst possible thing.
Sure. Right. We always assume that's
right. And that's what they assume with Leigh Hansen.
Yeah, she basically says, "I'm not going to answer this question." And the reason she's not going to answer the question is because if she was a man, nobody would have fucking asked it.
But what they all say is, but if it's not true, why wouldn't you say that? And that's what makes me crazy.
Yeah. And if there's anything and I don't know that, I like the movie a lot. If there's anywhere that I would raise an objection, it's in the fact that she never publicly states. It's always a private statement.
If I were a man,
statement.
It wouldn't matter.
It's always a private statement to people. Instead of her saying publicly, "You know what, the reason I'm not going to answer this is because if I were a man, whether or not this is true would be irrelevant."
Yeah.
And I would expect to be treated the same way, and therefore... Yeah. I'm not going to respond to these accusations.
John F. Kennedy, anybody?
You know, and I understand that, you know, there are certain dramatic choices that you make to have the film go on longer because if she'd said that right at the beginning, they probably would have been like, "Oh, yeah, I guess, fuck." but, and they would have shut up and moved on to something else. But it did bother me a little that this fight that she had is a private one. In other words, she says it to a couple of characters privately, but she never says publicly.
Yeah.
The reason I will not address these issues is specifically because nobody would care if I was a man. And nobody would care whether it was true or not if I was a man.
The time for her to say that would have been in her closing statement when she mentioned all her issues and everything, because I think in a hearing, you can only answer when asked, and so.
Well, but I mean, she could have said it to the press.
Absolutely.
I will say also, like, just let my St. Kate's education kind of hit the road here.
Oh, there you go.
From a feminist deconstructive point of this film, the fact that she doesn't say that shows kind of this whole, like, strong, silent women thing, that, like, women are, like, we hold in our righteous grievances, and like she has this very valid point of saying you wouldn't say this if I were a man, but she doesn't say it because it's okay. I'm just not going to answer it, and we'll just see where that goes. And I feel like I don't think that was the point of the film.
No.
But the point of a deconstruction of things is to say, but what message is this giving, and what point is it making that it didn't try to make? And I think that is a viewpoint one could take and say, like, why doesn't she say that? Is it because that she still feels silenced, that even though she's a woman in power, she's a senator who's been picked to be the vice president, and she still doesn't feel like she can stick up for herself in the barest amounts?
Well,
in
what
that
she
way.
Says is
she has to have the president come in and yell at the Senate and tell them that they were all really mean and now they should vote for her. That's what happens. The man comes in and says, you guys, that was uncool. And she's out there right now, and she says she doesn't want to be vice president, but I'm not going to let that happen.
Because I'm a man.
So you guys better vote for her and make her be vice president, even though she doesn't want to be anymore.
Even though, of course, you know, when you sit back and you analyze it from a filmmaking perspective, you got to have the big political speech at the end.
Right.
It's got to be by the president.
But why wasn't it hers?
Because it's got to be by the president.
And I understand
that's the way political movies work.
It's an interesting way to look at it. It's similar to a dude telling me that I am not a good feminist for whatever reasons. And it's do you not understand the hilarity here? That, like, you as a man are telling me that I am not being a feminist in the right way. Like, it's kind of funny.
All right. I think we've discussed this movie.
It's a great movie. You should watch it.
It really is a good movie. I recommend it. I don't think it's streaming
on Netflix. I feel like my movie viewing experience is more complete having seen it.
If anybody can hear my deaf cat howling in the background, she's outside the door and she really wants to get in. But
we have our answers for five questions from a listener and friend of ours, Jordan Chronic. Hi, Jordan.
Thanks for your answers, Jordan.
Thank you for your answers. We're going to go over those today.
Now, friend of the show, Jordan
Chronic. he and I have been playing D&D and shit since we were like 13 or something like that.
So it totally fits the geek.
Yeah, you're right. No, he's
not a geek.
He's the person I know that's like most completely understands the philosophical underpinnings of Magic the Gathering.
Dude, he's written amazing in-depth articles about Magic.
We're getting ahead
Magic
of ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've
right,
seen
right,
his
right.
answers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
We'll get to that in a minute.
The first question, of course, the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days, you know, theater or otherwise. He says, Cabin in the Woods. I'm probably the ideal audience for this movie as it went. I went in not knowing anything about it other than it was a horror movie and what the title was, and that Joss Whedon was involved. And then he goes on to say that it was like biting into chocolate and finding out it was a really good caramel rather than the raspberry swirl you were expecting. And we all love Cabin in the Woods.
We're not going to say
anything beyond that.
Yeah,
Jordan,
I got to see it last December at Butnamathon, and it was. I'm not a horror movie fan, and I really enjoyed it.
It's because he's a big pussy.
I've said this before. I will say it again. Cabin in the Woods is the spiritual successor to the Evil Dead and Army of Darkness movies.
Yeah,
Cabin in the Woods is the best movie that I saw all year so far. Easy.
Last, yeah.
No,
in this
sure
last 12 I, months, yeah, I'd have
a. Are you talking theatrical release?
Yes.
Theatrical movie?
Theatrical release. A new movie. I'd be hard-pressed to think of something else, but maybe I can think... I'll try to think of something.
Avengers is pretty good.
Not better than Cabin in the Woods. I love you, Avengers, but...
I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark in the theater.
Question two is... the favorite atheist character, and he says, Cerberus the Aardvark.
Oh.
Which is Dave Sim's comic, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great, a classic. Although Cerberus starts out as a deeply religious character, he eventually attains 100% certainty that even if the events in his life appear to be the work of God, they are not. This happens because he becomes aware that he and everything else in his universe is fictional, including God. Cerberus continues to participate in religion as he eventually becomes a major religious figure. I think he becomes Pope. Still with the understanding that he, his religion, and his God are all fictional. It makes him wonder if Deadpool ever came to a similar religious conclusion.
Oh, sure.
As he's a character that's also aware that he's fictional. And
that's a great character, although I think I would imagine a lot of folks listening have no familiarity. I'll have to make sure I link in the show.
Cerberus the Aardvark. Yeah. I suppose it's kind of obscure for comic readers now, but it was...
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have known anything about it if I hadn't been friends with Jordan, because he talked to me about it first. I'd never heard of it before.
But so, that's cool.
It's no, it's a
nice deep cut there.
There's a one shot story in it that is, the Marx Brothers are in it. It's not the Marx Brothers, but it's totally the Marx Brothers, and it's amazing. It's a must read.
And I think the idea that that he becomes a leader of a religious movement, even though he's an atheist, I kind of a lot of the times feel like. A lot of the folks who are the high
leaders. L. Ron Hubbard, man.
I wonder how many of them have reached that point and don't entirely believe what they're saying. At some point you wonder if you've made it that far.
Yeah.
You've seen enough to just know that it's just
kind of like how all the pastors that are preaching the homosexuality cure are gay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like it. Well, I think there's a project called the Clergy Project, which is for people who have been priests and became atheists and have to get out of that. But so many of them talk about how difficult it is and that they stayed ministers for a long time after they had completely lost their belief in God. So, anyway, it's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
Sure. So, question three, your geekiest hobby. He says he's an amateur Magic the Gathering historian. Precisely one person in the world actually makes a living as a Magic the Gathering historian. His name is Brian David Marshall.
It's geeky enough that he even knows that name.
He's also an editor and writer for some time at Marvel. Historians are pretty geeky, and magic is a lot geeky, so devoting relatively significant time and effort to studying the history of magic is over-the-top geeky. And I would say that since you're not getting paid for it, it's even more geeky.
It is.
Yes, and Jordan can, he can name, current past champions. He knows who's, making a big splash in the circuit. He has gloated to me before about getting into hours long arguments about rules minutia, where he enjoys just being able to be that rules lawyer dick that's like, no, fuck you, you're wrong, and here's 10 paragraphs why.
That's impressive, the factual stuff and then the knowing trivia bits.
Yeah.
What is more impressive to me is the philosophical and theoretical concepts of the different colors and all that, and how that influences game style, and how if you keep that in mind, you can actually be a better player.
It's like character alignment.
It's really overwhelming.
Does he have writing that we could link to?
I'm sure he
can ask him.
We should totally link to some of this stuff.
Absolutely.
Because totally geeky, awesome.
Yeah. So favorite sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
I once had a pastrami sandwich at a little deli in Washington, D.C. It was the most magical sandwich experience of my life. I talked about that sandwich for months afterward. Unfortunately, I ate it more than 18 years ago now and couldn't remember what the deli was called if my life depended on it. It will forever remain the one sandwich that got away.
Dude, how can you have the best sandwich ever?
18 years ago. So that must have been a high school trip to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, or maybe family. Yeah, yeah.
Or family. Oh, sure. Yeah,
I got to tell you about high schoolers going to Washington, D.C. Just sidetrack this for a minute. I went to Washington, D.C. I've been there a couple of times, and I was there with my wife once, and she was ill one morning, and I decided to go to visit Ford's Theater. Ford's Theater, where Abraham Lincoln was assassinated.
Yeah. Wait, what? Abraham Lincoln was assassinated?
I know, it's crazy.
Spoilers.
So I'm standing in the line to go to Ford's Theater, and this big crowd of high schoolers comes up.
Oh, God.
And I think they're here to get into the line to go to Ford's Theater, right? No, they're not going to Ford's Theater. They're going to the establishment that's on the corner right near Ford's Theater, which is the fucking Hard Rock Cafe.
Oh, that's Jesus.
That's fucking high schoolers in Washington, D.C. They go and they buy themselves a Hard Rock Cafe t-shirt when they're down the block from the theater where Lincoln was assassinated.
That's what I'm saying.
And they also forget where they have the best pastrami sandwich they ever made.
We went to D.C. We were supposed to go to D.C. in 7th grade. I did not get to go because my baby brother Riley was about to be born. So thanks a lot, Riley. Never been to Washington,
D.C. Way to go.
Way to
ruin it, Riley.
It ruins everything.
So then our final question is, what's the dumbest or perhaps most offensive thing you've heard regarding your atheism, skepticism, agnosticism, etc.?
Atheism.
He said, it's not a singular statement, but perhaps the most consistently baffling one, whenever someone claims that I'm going to hell for being an atheist, and expects that to somehow influence my decision on the matter. If I don't believe in God, it follows that I don't believe in hell, so why would the threat of a fictional punishment sway me? It's like a loan shark trying to get money out of you by threatening to send the tooth fairy around to break your legs. Which is a great analogy.
That's great.
Yeah.
My son Alex, when he decided that he didn't believe in God, he would talk about it with kids on the bus. And there was literally one day where the kids on the bus said, well, if you don't believe in God, you're going to go to hell. And he just looked at him and said, that doesn't make any sense at all. At the time, he was like 7 or 8. That doesn't make any logical sense to a 7 or 8-year-old. How is it supposed to make logical sense to anybody else?
Conversely, I'm the one that was like, you know Santa's your parents, right? And I'm like, that's cute. Santa is your parents because you don't believe in Santa, but Santa still comes to my house because I believe, so
until you were 16,
like, super full of like myself, like just really like chuffed, like rolling my eyes, like, whoa, you poor sweet summer child, what do you know?
Yeah. So all the magic is gone from your life.
So yeah, thanks
for your questions, Jordan. Or
yeah,
answers,
thanks a lot,
rather.
Jordan.
We've been Geeks Without God. You can like us on Facebook, or if you want to send in your answers to our 5 questions, you can send them to Nick, Tim, or Molly at geekswithoutgod.com.
Next time, when we do the next one, we're going to have a guy from Australia who sent us answers.
Yeah,
I'm very excited
awesome.
About that.
Very exciting.
Australia, dude. Also, some guy from Malta sent us answers. He's
sweet.
He's coming up.
We're getting them from all over. So we're trying to do them in the order we receive them. But keep
so
sending
some
them.
Some of you might have
like
to wait for
Facebook.
Months and months and months.
Look on Facebook, Geeks Without God, and then click like.
Bye.
Bye.
Get off my plane.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks
without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks without God.
Don't select all. That's what assholes do.